This is Turn It On.
Everybody, and welcome to episode 44 of Turn It On. My name is Michael J, and this is my podcast. Thank you so much for joining me here again today. As always, I hope you're doing well. My good friend Luke DeJanes is on the program today, and I'm going to get to that talk quickly. But before I do, it's time for the award-winning segment of this program. Not really. Yes, folks, it's time for
Stories from the Road!
I've mentioned previously that I'm going to run out of these stories from the road soon because I've only done just so much living at this point. So please send me your stories from the road. And they can also just be interesting stories if you're a musician, actor, or other kind of entertainer. Something that happened to you, something that happened to someone else. It doesn't matter. And frankly, I don't care. Send them to me at MJ, that's letter M, letter J, MJ at TIOpod.com. Or you can also drop me a line on the contact page of our website, TIOpod.com. Please bring them on, guys and gals. I'll literally read anything on here. I don't care. All right, today's story isn't so much a story from the road as it is just an interesting story. Sometimes as a Nashville-based sideman slash guitarist slash backing vocalist, etc., etc., I have to do some odd things for the artists that I work for occasionally. Sometimes they're errands, sometimes they're favors, and sometimes they're just odd requests. And I've done a bunch of work for country artist and syndicated morning radio show host Chuck Wicks. I've been playing with Chuck pretty much since I moved to Nashville around 6 years ago. And one day a few years back, I got a text from my friend Chris Nix, who is the guitarist for Jonathan Davis of Korn currently. Chris has also been on the program several times. He also plays with Chuck when his schedule permits. And this text message simply said this: "Want to help Chuck and me move his alligator around too?" I didn't know what to think when I saw that, so I said sure. And Chuck, as it turns out, was in the process of moving into an apartment building downtown, and being an avid hunter, he of course had a taxidermied 15 to 20 foot alligator that he had killed. And this thing was adorning most of the floor of his apartment. And when I arrived that day, I realized why Chris had called me for help. This thing was not only huge, but also weighed an absolute ton. And it was most definitely a three-person job, not only because of the weight of it, but because it was an incredibly awkward thing to carry. And Chuck told us we would need to be extra careful because, as he put it, quote, "This thing is one of my most prized possessions, so don't break it, guys." And we would have to load this thing out of his old place, put it in the bed of his pickup truck, and then once we got it to his new apartment building, the three of us would then have to somehow get it to the elevator and up to one of the top floors. I think it was like the 12th floor or something. We managed to get it into his pickup truck, and Chris rode in the bed with it, and the tailgate had to stay down because it was too long to fit. And we were getting crazy looks from people on the road the whole way there. In fact, for the untrained eye, it would have looked to people passing by or driving past us like we had just killed this alligator and put it in the bed of Chuck's truck. It was crazy. Once we got to the new building, the three of us got it to the elevator, and Chuck sat on the floor and positioned the snout of the alligator in his crotch, and Chris held the midsection, and I held up the tail, and we had to go tail first up into the elevator and hold it upside down. And of course, we only got about halfway up before the elevator stopped, and the doors opened to a group of shocked and highly amused people who just stared at the three of us in disbelief and kind of awkwardly said, "I guess we'll get the next one." And we managed to get it up to the 12th floor and down to Chuck's apartment, which was kind of a hall from where the elevator was, down a hallway, around a corner, and it's still, to this day, hands down, one of the craziest and weirdest things I've ever helped a friend move. And that's this week's installment of
Stories from the Road.
All right, my buddy Luke DeJanes is here today. I love this guy. Luke is an amazing drummer and also a studio owner and an incredible producer and engineer. He's currently on tour with my other friends, Jameson Rogers, Jimi Hendrix, and Adam Flomeyer. They're out playing to mostly sold-out arenas across America at the moment with Luke Combs and Lanco on the Beer Never Broke My Heart tour. And aside from Luke's incredibly busy life doing all the aforementioned things, he also finds the time to be a teacher. And he and I sat down in a recording studio at the school where he works when he's not on the road, and we had an amazing talk. As you'll hear us discuss here, it's been a bucket list item for Luke to be a guest on a podcast for some time. So I'm really happy to be the guy to have made that dream come true for him today. And I guess it's the Luke DeJanes show today here on Turn It On. So sit back, relax, have a coffee, or maybe go make yourself some tacos and enjoy my chat with my good friend, Luke DeJanes. So we're doing this.
Is it doing it?
Oh, it's going, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I just started. I don't get you ready at all.
You know, warm me up, baby.
Yeah, exactly.
Buy me a drink, maybe?
No. I don't drink, so I'm not buying you one.
Oh, that's right. Oh, man.
So tell me how the tour's been going, man. I want to hear about that first, because that's...
Yeah. Everyone's been sort of asking me that, and my response is... it's kind of what I expected. All the things that I thought would be awesome about the tour are super awesome.
Right.
And all the things I thought might be a little shitty about it are pretty shitty.
Like what?
I mean, just the travel. You know, just...
Travel's brutal,
Just being on the road. And granted, like, we have it pretty good. I mean, we have three catered meals a day, and it's really good food.
I'm so sorry.
Tons of options. I know, right? Like, I should keep complaining.
Nobody listening right now is on your side at all.
Guys, touring
this is
so
really
hard.
It sucks. Guys, we have three catered meals
three
a day.
Three catered meals.
There's a you know, massage therapist backstage.
There is. It's so hard, guys. No, but you know what I mean? There's just... a fatigue that comes with being on the road, no matter what level. I bet if you talk to people at, you know, freaking U2 level, still when they get home off the road, they're exhausted. And I don't know what that is. I haven't figured out, because it's
travel alone, man. Just the wear and tear it puts on your body. Like, even if you're not doing anything, I don't know why that is, but like, for example, today I just came off a 10 day run.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to get some work done today. I wanted to do this with you because we've talked about it for a long time, and I knew you were really excited about it.
Yeah,
so,
I am.
But I'm like, if you expect me to do anything else other than like have a conversation with somebody, I'm a space cadet today. I can't even function.
So, yeah. I don't know what that is. I mean, you know, I guess just not sleeping in your own bed, you don't get as good a rest or something. But anyway, so just the road has been... as everybody knows who does this, it's hard. And keeping up with, because we have a Sprinter and a trailer, and it's a super nice Sprinter, so like I can't even complain about that. It's got like a lounge area with two TVs and two couches and a fridge and all that, and then we have five bunks in the back.
Oh,
you know,
cool.
And they're small, but you know, they're
good enough to rest.
Look at me, I'm like 5 foot, barely six,
but I'm 5'8" on a good day, so, with the afro, 5'7".
So it's a nice, but at the same time, like, keeping up with bus routing is just hard.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like you leave at midnight to try to get to the next venue by 8, you know, or whatever. And
do you guys have a driver for this?
We do have a driver.
Oh, you do? Okay.
So he drives, but you know, there's been a few that are like, you know, upwards of 10, 12, 14 hours. And so like, we'll pitch in, you know, just so he's not killing himself.
Yeah.
So that, just the travel, not being on a schedule, not being on my normal schedule, you just have to adjust your body back and forth, because when I'm not on the road, I'm doing other stuff here, and I have to just instantly snap back into like normal person body schedule.
Yeah. So you've been doing what, like just weekend, like Thursday through Sunday kind of deals?
It's been Thursday, Friday, Saturday shows for a month now.
Okay.
We leave Wednesday night.
Yep.
You know, typical. And then what's nice is we leave about midnight every night. So I'm home on Sunday, usually by morning.
Oh, good.
So okay. I get my Sunday back. That's the nice thing.
Yeah. Have you found it hard to juggle that with your family and your kids? How many kids do you have?
I have three.
You have three kids. Okay. Three. So that's got to be...
It is hard. We've been making the best of it. I try to be really intentional. Like, okay, when I get home, I have to like at least have this afternoon to make sure I'm plugged in there, you know?
Right.
It's my biggest challenge on this whole thing has just been balance. Mm-hmm. Like I'm trying to, like I preach that to a lot of like students and like younger kids, like balance, balance is the way to get through this industry.
That's totally it.
Yeah. But I'm like a hypocrite like talking about it because I feel so out of balance most of the time.
It's really hard to do, man. Like even with what I'm doing, I'm not touring nearly as much as you guys are now, but even, to come back and to try and find that space where you can, you know, I have to try to find time to play every day, even to try and keep my chops up. Do you have a hard time with that when you're, or do you feel that you need to take time to kind of practice when you're not on the road for those few days a week?
And I would love to, but I don't.
You don't?
I just honestly don't. Like I just have my list of priorities in my life. And as much as I would love to do that, like it's just down the list. And so, you know, like if there's time left over after those things on the list are done,
right,
then I will.
Yeah.
But I do get some playing in because I'm typically doing like some studio stuff or whatever. So it's not like I just don't play until the next show.
Right.
But most I don't practice.
Yeah.
Which I hate to admit. As a professional musician.
Yeah. It's hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard. It's when I was, I lived in Florida for a good decade or more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was playing every single day and I was singing every single day. And I took for granted once I moved to Nashville, I think it was about maybe 2 or 3 months in and I went, oh God, like if I'm not playing, then I'm out of shape. Like I have to play every single day.
Yes. No, you know? I agree. I think if I'm going to play something new, I definitely will put some practice time in. Luckily, we're so well rehearsed now on this tour thing that's like, it's kind of just like pressing play.
Muscle memory kind of like, there's kind of a good degree of like just execution of the show going on.
So, you know, I don't feel like I'm super rusty when Thursday rolls back around because I just kind of like execute, but definitely if I have to like do new stuff, you know, I'm just like, oh,
yeah,
you know, feeling a little... So, yeah. So, it's practice is not part of my normal routine, unfortunately. Man, just because I just have to try to prioritize and I try to make that list and then just stick to it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, this is what's important. I only have so much time. I'm here part of Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and part of Wednesday. Like, what has to get done in those few days?
Yeah.
You know, and obviously my family is at the top of that list.
Sure.
And so, I don't do a good job of always keeping it that way, but I try to.
Yeah. So do you, have you noticed, has there been a change in the way you've had to approach playing because you've been doing arenas, right? Mm-hmm. And had you done any arenas before this or?
Not like this, no. I mean, I probably have played in one or two in my life, you know, a big festival or something, but not this like playing to an audience that like it's sold out every night.
Sure.
I think the biggest crowd so far has been like 16.5. And it's just
have they been in, because you guys are at the top of the lineup, right? Have they been, has it been fairly like, or are people kind of filing in there and when you start to play?
Every venue is different and every night's different, but it's been, we're starting to see some trends. Like Thursday night is always lighter at the beginning.
Right.
And they're
probably still getting off work and
off work and they're a little more tame because I think they have to go back to work the next day. And then Friday's better and then Saturday's wild.
Like crazy.
Yeah. But I'd say a fair assessment so far has been that I would say the minute we walk on stage, the arena's a little over half full.
Right.
And then probably midway through our set, it's three quarters full. Yeah. And then I would say it's probably
close to full by the end,
close to full by our last song.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but even still, even half full,
oh, dude, that's amazing.
Like 8,000 people in front of you.
Yeah.
And what's nice is there's always the pit area.
Sure.
And that's always full. Cause those are the people who get there like 4 hours ahead of time.
Yeah.
Cause they want to stand up front. And so you're always playing to energetic people right up in front of you. And the rest of the arena is so dark half the time.
I can't tell
if there's 50,000 people or four people over there.
Yeah. Right.
So yeah.
Have you noticed over the course of maybe doing this for, what, it's been a month now since you've been doing it?
Yeah, this will be our fifth weekend.
Fifth weekend, okay. Has it changed the way you, have there been any changes in the way you play to fill that space?
Yes, that's a good question. The first few shows were just playing kind of terrified.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, of course.
You know,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
just like, don't yeah. forget the parts. Play the parts. Like, don't get off the yeah. click. And now, this isn't specifically addressing your question, but now I feel like as a band, we're just having fun.
Yeah.
So we're playing loose and we're like throwing right. stuff in and looking at each other and winking, you know, and
yeah.
that kind of stuff.
It's so, cool that you get a chance to, if you had a chance to kind of do it over an extended period, because that must be like the fun for me too, comes sort of later in the run, where the first few shows you're kind of going, oh my God, same thing. Like, don't forget. Don't mess this up. Don't mess that up.
Yeah. So, but there has been, specifically to just playing rooms that big, there has been a few changes I've had to make. I mean, this is kind of dorky stuff.
That's fine. No, like, trust me. I did a whole episode on guitar and I thought nobody was going to care. And I got the most response from anybody yeah. like, oh, this is great. I'm like, really?
Yeah. I mean, just small things. I had gotten a brand new set. The people over at Pearl were like super nice and helped me get into a custom set for the tour.
Oh, right on.
And,
you deal with Kevin Packard over there?
No.
You know Kevin?
John Fark okay. Carson is the artist relations okay. guy. Cool. Super, super nice.
Awesome.
Yeah, oh yeah. man, I can't say enough good things. But anyway, so I had this kit for about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And I had it in my studio. I was like, this thing sounds freaking awesome, man. You know, everything's kind of wide open and
right.
tone and sustain and right. resonance. And then I got out there in that arena and it was just like
too much.
Like,
yeah,
it was just boingy and everything was ringing and feeding back. And, you know, so I, like, literally every weekend up to this point, I've been changing something. Like,
sure.
I need new tom heads. I need to thicken them up, darken them up. Oh, I need more dampening in my kick. I need a bigger porthole in my kick. So I've been tweaking, like, the sound of my drums.
Yeah.
In terms of how I play, I've been dialing in my mix a little better in terms of that. A room like that gets so loud, even though we're all on ears. Mm-hmm. You know how that is.
I do. Yeah, yeah.
That affects.
Sure.
That affects just how you feel and hear everything. So I've really had to adjust my mix differently so that I can play. I'm not trying to play on top of that big room sound, if
yeah.
that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
I've turned up some of my own instruments louder than I normally would like them in my ears, just so that I'm not breaking cymbals every night.
Right.
Yeah. It allows me to play controlled versus, like,
sure.
In a room that big, your instinct is just to smack the crap out of everything.
Well, yeah, I mean, the PA's doing the work for you.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, yeah. I actually heard something at one point about, I think it was Def Leppard, where they were talking about when they got stuff to arenas and even how they approached writing their songs and recording the stuff, where they would simplify everything to the nth degree because they wanted it to play in those big spaces. And they would also, they would slow their songs down live by several clicks so that there was more space in between everything because faster tempos would get lost.
It's messy. Yeah.
We get lost. Are you leaving more space in your, or are you still?
No, I'm overplaying everything.
Cool. That's good.
Just ask Adam.
Yeah. Oh, good. Well, you were never really an overplayer.
I can be. And I'm aware of it. So I try to be like,
dial it back a little bit.
Yeah. I try to find that balance of, like, I have a personality in terms of how I play.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of the reason why I get hired sometimes, because people want that specific thing that I bring that maybe somebody else doesn't.
Right.
But also I realize sometimes that can be overdone and I can just be getting in the way of what the song and, like, what's supposed to be being translated.
Sure.
It's not like the Luke show, you know, so.
Yeah. Oh, the Luke show.
The Luke show.
The Luke show.
That's going to be coming on tour after this.
The Luke show. Well, we're on the Luke show right now.
Really? You changed the name of the podcast?
You're on it. It's now today's the Luke Show.
I gotcha.
That's it, yeah.
Which, thank you, by the way. Like, I'm telling you,
you gotta tell me about this, because, like, when I did the talk with Adam, I was like, oh, we're gonna get Luke on this. He's like, oh yeah, he's so excited about it. So
I have like bucket list stuff for myself.
Yeah. Why podcast?
I don't know. I, like, probably about 4 years ago, I just started getting into podcasts in general. I was like, that's so cool. And I've always had this little secret desire to do one.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe someday I will. But I've always just wanted to be on one.
Yeah.
And
so this is the first and only one.
This is the first podcast I've ever been on. And I've got a couple of friends who have them, and they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to get you on someday. And it just never happens. Yeah. And today, my friend, you have checked a major.
You know who the guy is?
Yeah.
I'm the guy
you
today.
You are.
I'm the guy. Michael J. helping dreams come true.
It was a couple of things this year. It's like play arenas, right. Be on a podcast.
Dude.
Two
that's
down.
It. You may as well retire.
I might.
Call it a day. That's cool. What podcast do you listen to?
I listen to kind of nerdy stuff.
Cool.
Autumn and I were just talking about that on the way over here. There's one called Astonishing Legends.
Okay.
And it's like, they cover everything from like, it's just legendary folklore that may have some truth in it.
Sure.
So.
You listen to Lore at all? Have you heard Lore?
No.
Oh, you got to listen to Lore. It's the same kind of thing. It's like, I think they made it a TV show, actually.
Really?
Recently. It's that's probably right along the same lines as what you're thinking. It's like historical things that they talk about, and so some of it might be a little mysterious, or some of it might be a little weird, and then they kind of go off. Yeah, it's interesting. Look up Lore.
Tripping my trigger.
You'll love it. You'll love it.
Lore. Yeah. Like, well, I got into it because I'm a huge Curse of Oak Island fan.
Oh, dude. Yeah.
You know, the whole mystery behind like what happened on this island, right. Whatever. And so they did a 4-part series on this podcast. So I listened to that and I was like, oh, this podcast is kind of cool.
Right.
And so now they do everything from, I mean, they do normal, like kind of haunted ghost stories to like, weird alleged Nazi weapons they had in World War II and like
I love that stuff too. That's anyway. Probably you'll have to send me a list of your podcasts because I'll check them out. I listen to them all the time. It's cool because this art form, if you want to call it that, I think it's something that we're losing more now in our culture and our society, where like people don't really talk anymore too much. They're texting or they're on social media or they're whatever, and the art of the conversation, of sitting down and actually having a one-on-one conversation with another human being is I feel like it's getting lost. So I think there's maybe to some degree, and this is just my bullshit theory, but to some degree I think the rise in popularity of podcasts is because we want to hear that. Like, I love hearing two people talk. I don't even care what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Like, to me, sometimes there's always nuggets of interesting stuff in those conversations that you can pull out, or something you can relate to, or, you know.
That makes sense, because you're right, because podcasting did just kind of just take off all of a sudden.
Hugely, in the last 10 years,
probably. Yeah, I mean, it's like the interview, you know, person-to-person interview things have been happening forever.
Right.
But like just this whole idea of podcasting. But you're right. I'd be interested to see how the trend in like social media communication, all that.
Yeah.
Also, you know, if like podcasting sort of had its rise at the same time that did.
Probably. I mean, there's so much lost with... Well, you know how text messaging is. You don't hear the tone in someone's voice. So depending on what kind of mood you're in, you read that text message with your bias on it.
Right.
And not, you know, not maybe what that person means or whatever. You're not seeing their eyes. You're not, you know, reading their body language. You're not any of that stuff. So
well, that's why we have emojis, Michael.
Oh, is that?
So I can project my emotions through a monkey picture.
I get it. I totally get it.
So what are we talking about?
I don't know. See, that's the other beautiful thing about podcasts is, and I try so hard to keep this show as loose and like, I mean, because I could sit here and if I had a bunch of interview questions for you, we'd just get that.
Yeah.
Like, I love, this is great so far. Like, I love that we're just talking about random bullshit because this is going to be a good episode because of that we're just kind of rolling. But
good.
I do want to find out more about you because I don't know much other than we've played together just a little here and there through with JMO.
I was trying to think, when was that? The first I saw you play with him, there was that one show at the Basement
Basement East. Yeah.
And I,
your brother was on that gig.
I think. And I was playing with Jameson at the time, but I was also playing with the band Everett at the time. And I think someone thought like they were both on the bill.
Right.
And someone I think thought like it's gonna be weird if like there's like shared players or whatever, and so I ended up playing with Everett, but you played and Mike Stirred played drums.
Okay. Yep.
And Adam played too.
And Adam played too
with you.
That was...
And so that's the first time that I met you, I think. But
that was a funny night because I've known Adam. I've played with Adam a long time and known him, and he asked me, he's like, oh, I got this buddy who's doing, I think it was a CMA fest. There was a CMA week.
Yes, it was. You're right.
And Adam had asked me, he's like, oh, I got this buddy who's doing a show at Basement East. Like, can you help fill in? And I'm like, yeah, dude, sure. And he sent me, like, I think it was like 5 songs or something like that. And this is how naive me, like I go, this is how I go through life. So I thought, oh, cool. Some guy's doing a CMA thing, showcase, might be interesting. So I knew nothing about Jameson at mm-hmm. all. And so I learned these songs, and I think we had a rehearsal beforehand.
Okay.
And we got into rehearsal, and I went, wow, these guys are really, like, everybody's really good. Like, this is really cool. And then this guy walked in who I think was, maybe, might have been Jameson's manager. It might be the guy at the label who he still deals with. I'm not sure if that was who it was or not. But I thought, oh, because I didn't know he was signed. I had no idea that any of this stuff
yeah.
at all. So yeah. I thought, oh, this guy. And I asked the guy, I was like, oh, are you with, you know, with Jameson's? He's like, I'm with his label. And I thought, okay. And it still didn't register. And we get to the show at Basement East, and there's people from CAA backstage. And mm-hmm. like, I'm like, oh, so are you with, you know, it's like, oh, I'm with CAA, like, yeah, Jameson's. And I'm thinking, what an idiot I am. Like, I'm thinking the whole time, going, wow, this guy's got a real good shot. The songs are really good, and he's got a pretty big future. He might make it. He might do okay.
You know what? That's what's funny about this town, though. You know what I mean?
Well, you never know. Yeah.
It's like, when you run in, you get called for a gig, and same with me. Like, I'm not that plugged into the scene where I like know all the up and coming people yeah. and what's going on. So they'll be like, oh, so and so, and I'm like, cool.
I find it works better if I don't know who people are, because then I don't treat them any differently.
Yeah,
and some people have found it really funny that I don't know who they are, like, because I'm like, and they're like, you don't know who that guy? That guy's done like this, this, and this. I'm like, oh, really?
Yeah.
He's not Bono. I don't know who he is.
Yeah. There's levels of Michael. There's either Bono or I don't know who you are.
I don't know who you are. Pretty close. So anyway, we were talking about that show. But.
Yeah, so that's the first time I met you. But then we played together mm-hmm. shortly after that because, it was Adam out or something? Oh, no?
Yeah. Yeah, no. I did some gigs with J-Mo where Adam... Well, that was the other thing about that show, too. People were like, I thought I was filling in for another guitar player when it was always just Adam in the tracks.
Yeah.
And people kept walking up to me and going, God, it's so great with two guitar players. So, mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, and then I found out, you know, oh, yeah, there's never been another guitar player. I'm like, I thought I was. So I was completely misinformed from right across the board. I had no idea.
Yeah,
I'm
that was one of the first times. There was one other time. When Adam was transitioning into the band, I know you guys talked about this a little bit in your interview too, but Anthony Olympia was the original guitar player.
Okay.
And so he was kind of we were prepping for Adam to take over, but there was a couple shows where they both played together and we were like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
And so then that only happened like once or twice. And then when you came in, it was like, oh, wow. That I remember being in the audience that night going like, yeah, this sounds freaking epic.
Yeah.
So, and then we played, maybe we didn't play without Adam. Maybe... You came on that run.
I think we did maybe a couple gigs with Adam, and then we started doing some stuff where, like, there was some, it was a bunch of different kind of lineups, like, whoever was available, I think, that J-Mo was taking out, where there were some runs where we just did, like, a couple, like weekend kind of things, like a Friday, Saturday mm-hmm. kind of deal, where it was just a different lineup every time. But I was, like, it was just one guitar player, and I think Adam was busy. Well, I think maybe Adam was staying closer to home because of the baby.
It's either that or there was that period of time where Adam and I were on the road with Bailey Bryan fairly heavily. And so that was when I was missing a few Jameson shows and he was too. So there might have been some of that. But when you got in, though, I remember specifically you got in on that when you played those shows and it was like February a year ago.
Yeah.
And we went to year, right? Mississippi.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
I've been with Jameson for 3 years. And that weekend... something clicked.
Oh, that was the weekend of the Lyric.
It was like the weekend of the Lyric, which was a great show. But even besides that show, like from that moment on, everything with him has had a different energy.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about it a lot. I think I think Spotify had a huge play in that. But you got, I will never forget those runs because that was the moment I went like, wow, I haven't seen this before. Like, I've been doing this a long time, and I've never seen something turn a corner like this.
Yeah. Those were exciting shows, man. Yeah. That was a cool time, you know?
That Lyric show that you were on is still probably in my top three shows I've ever played.
Oh, me too. And I'm still consider myself really lucky to have just kind of accidentally been there.
Yeah.
You know?
It was, somebody said it, I don't know if maybe it was you,
it
said
might have
it
been
too.
Me, yeah.
Yeah, it was you.
Yeah, definitely me.
Somebody said, like, you could have literally taken Jameson off the stage and replaced him with Bon Jovi and the energy in the room would have been the same.
It was, dude. Yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody singing every single word louder than the band.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was a pretty magical night. So I'm pretty excited to have,
yeah.
It was so nice to have shared that with you.
I'm honored. We talked about tacos a lot that weekend.
Dude, what was?
I don't even know the joke anymore. We just say tacos.
It's an inside joke now. Well, no, you know what it was? We got fish tacos somewhere. Was it fish tacos or just tacos?
Probably fish tacos, yeah.
And I think you guys were...
Well, you don't eat meat.
I don't anymore. I still eat fish, but I don't eat meat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And I think you guys were talking about something that I wasn't really paying attention to. And I think I made the comment like I think you guys had already said,
that's it.
You know what was the best part about the week? But, you know, the best food was the tacos. And I think I was, which is what I do all the time. About 20 minutes later, I went, you know what the best part about the food was? It was the tacos.
I heard they had really good tacos.
That was probably it. So now the inside joke is like, are you bringing tacos? Yeah. Be on the podcast. We'll make tacos.
We'll make tacos. I heard they have good tacos.
Yeah. I haven't had good tacos in a long time. But anyway.
What were we talking
about? I don't know. Gosh. Doesn't matter.
Well,
see, none of it matters.
You asked me about, you said you didn't
well,
know
no,
me
I wanted to find out more about like how you got started and all that. And like, so is it just is your brother younger or older than you?
He's younger. He's 5 years
and
younger.
And he's bassist.
He's bassist.
Yes. And is it just the two of you or do you have other siblings? Or
it's just us. Just me and Mark. Our parents, were in bands since before we were born.
Yeah.
So
really? So they
were full time touring musicians.
Before
they had me.
Oh really?
And then
together?
Yeah. Most of the time they would do like, they didn't necessarily play for like an artist. They would be like, they would tour like nightclubs and have residencies like,
yeah,
you know, 4 or 5 nights a week,
sure,
for 2 months straight somewhere. Yeah. And then they'd go to another town, same deal at a club.
Okay.
But they did that for years and years. And then when they finally had me, I think they just wanted to settle down a little more. And
what kind of music were they doing? And was it like an original band or was it cover stuff?
I think it was
or?
Primarily covers.
Yeah.
You know, playing a lot of just like lounges and like stuff like that. I mean, I think they did some other stuff too, but
is that how they met?
No. I don't even know how they met.
You don't know how your parents
met? I don't.
That's
I
good.
Don't know.
Hey, you might want to. I know you might want to find out.
Maybe I don't want to know.
Be a good thing to know.
Yeah, but so they've done that their whole lives. I mean, my dad was playing in bars. I mean, he dropped out of high school to do that.
Oh, okay. What does he play?
Guitar.
Oh, he's a guitarist. Okay.
Yeah, and so he'd done that his whole life, and then him and mom always did that, and then when they had me, I don't know if I caused it. Or if they decided, but you know, they kind of settled down. My dad started working a day job and but they were still always in weekend bands.
Right.
So I remember growing up, I mean, I couldn't even walk. I was in diapers sitting on the floor in the basement watching band practice.
Yeah.
And I always just watched the drummer for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so what would happen is by the time I got old enough to kind of do something, I'd be sitting there watching and they would be done. They'd leave and all the instruments be sitting there. And so I'd like crawl my way up onto the drum throne, probably couldn't reach the pedals yet, but start pounding
on it,
and try to replicate what I just saw happening, you know?
Right.
And so then I think my dad got tired of listening to that and he finally came down and said like, okay, here's a basic rock beat. My dad's not a drummer, but he could play enough to just go.
Yeah. You know? Most of us can.
Yeah.
I'm a terrible drummer, but no.
So he just kind of showed me some basic stuff and honestly, from then on, I don't remember what happened. I just know I just played and played and played.
Yeah.
And
where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Southeast Iowa, so there's nothing else to do.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right.
So we grew up, and then, my brother got into it a little later. He was about 10 when he started playing. I was probably about 4 or 5.
Yep.
And then, my parents were just always, they still are in bands. They were just had a gig this weekend.
Oh, you're kidding.
And
and your mom, a singer?
She sings, yeah.
Okay, does she play an instrument or she?
She plays little keys, but she's mostly singing or background vocals and stuff. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
They always get to do it together.
Do you ever have like a family band kind
of
thing?
We had one for one time.
Because you got everybody, right? You got a bass and drums and guitar.
We did it one time for a summer. It was like, I was in college and one summer that I was home, we put together, it's the only time we've ever done it, we did a little band. We just worked up a bunch of covers and stuff. But it was me and one of my buddies from college played keys. And then Mark on bass.
Uh-huh.
And my mom and dad. And then we had another singer too. And we rehearsed like all summer. I think we played 2 shows.
Yeah.
Like a wedding and some random like corn festival in the middle of Iowa.
That's awesome.
It was fun though. Yeah. My dad still, like, we made a recording. He still likes to listen to it.
Yeah.
Talk. So it was cool. It's something that, you know, we can say we did one time. So, but yeah, that's kind of how that all got going. In my high school years, I kind of shifted. I was always doing music, but nobody really knew that I did. I would just kind of go home from school and like play Allman Brothers records and, you know, learn BB King riffs and stuff like that.
Right.
And then, I got really into baseball And I thought that's maybe what I wanted to do.
Okay.
So my whole high school was kind of like revolved around baseball. But then when I got time to go to college, I basically was talking to the baseball coach, and I knew I was going to study music because I didn't know what else to do with my life.
Right.
And the coach kind of said like, oh, you're going to do music. He's like, you kind of need to decide. He's like, because the music program is demanding and so is the baseball program, and people who try to do both have a tough job. Yeah. And so I went, well, I'm barely 5'6", weigh like 130. You know, professional sports probably aren't in my, even though I was decent, but anyway, so that's when I really decided, okay, music is where my life is headed.
Okay. Where'd you go to school?
I went to a small school in Greenville, Illinois. It's called Greenville University now.
Okay.
So they have a contemporary music program.
Okay.
So I went and I studied performance and also studio.
I was going to ask, that's where the studio side of things came in?
No, actually rewind. I skipped this part. When I was 15, my dad, he got into professional fishing for a while too, like bass. He would fish bass tournaments, which was awesome. That's like my biggest pastime, like my biggest love.
Big hobby into fishing?
Is like bass fishing, but probably because of that. But he had a really nice bass boat, and we had a 57 Chevy car that he was restoring too.
Yeah.
And something happened when I was 15. He's just like, you know what? We're going to build a recording studio. And so he sold the boat and sold the car, and we turned our entire, 40-foot garage into a recording studio. Wow. And so I spent all of high school learning how to produce and engineer, and we were running,
that's crazy.
We were running tape, you know what I mean? So I learned how to record on analog tape and run console and outboard gear.
Okay.
And so that's, I tell people, I produce and, engineer and play and all that. But I've been actually professionally producing and engineering longer than I've been professionally playing.
Oh, wow.
Because I would play, in my basement at home as a kid. But I actually started working and making money by the time I was 15 years old as an engineer in a studio.
Oh, okay.
Did
your dad know a lot about that? Or is that how it
kind of... Yeah, he did. I mean, just through all the experience he's had in life, he runs a lot of live sound too, so he knows.
Okay. Yeah, right.
He knows that world. So,
and so you also studied like recording, engineering, that kind of stuff at school, or was
I
that?
Did okay. I did okay. I sort of double majored in performance and then studio recording as well.
Okay. And so how long have you been in Nashville now? Has it been a little
bit? Well, I've had two stints in Nashville. Right after I graduated college, I got married. My wife and I have been married 16 years now.
Oh, congrats. That's no small feat.
I know,
when
I say the number out loud, is that right? Have I even been alive
that long? Some people don't last, 6 months, 16 months even.
So we got married right out of college and we moved here. Mm-hmm. So that was 2003. And I immediately got a gig touring with a girl in town and, just started getting my feet wet in the scene here.
Right.
And then, long story short, I was also playing in a band with my brother and some of my best friends in the whole world. And it was based out of St. Louis, which is near Greenville.
Sure.
Where we moved from. Okay. And so I was splitting a lot of my time touring between the, Nashville based artists and that band. And somewhere along that line, it was 2005. We had our firstborn son, Tyler.
Okay.
And so we were in Nashville, moved in 2003, I think. And then I was gone a lot. We were super young, our first kid, and it was a lot on us. Like,
I bet, yeah.
Like, it was one of those things where we just weren't mature enough to handle all of that.
Yep.
And so it really was taking a toll on our marriage. And it got to a point. This was like 2006 or seven to where we had split up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's when I knew, I was like, okay, something needs to change because I'm not willing to like lose all of this just to keep doing this.
Yeah.
And so that's when we ended up moving back. We moved back to the St. Louis area. She had family there. And so we kind of did a reset. So I was here for 4 years. Started getting plugged into the scene, did some touring, but I never really felt like I landed yet.
Yeah.
And it was a tough time. It was a really tough time. Yeah. But then, so we went back, and we kind of got our feet under us. We were a lot older. We had our second child, Ellie, And we just kind of put things back together in a way more healthy way. Yeah. And so then finally again in 2000, in that meantime, I was still playing and I had a studio up there that I was producing out of. I was also teaching at the college. And so, but at some point we just kind of felt like, you know, I think there's still more for us to do. And so in 2012, we moved back to Nashville.
What does your wife do?
She's in education. So she was a classroom teacher for years and years and years. Okay. But she's got like a bazillion degrees now.
Right.
And so now she's what they call a coach. Okay. So she teaches teachers.
Oh, okay.
So she's in the school system, but she goes and sort of makes sure that teachers are equipped to do their job properly. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit more of an administration position.
Okay.
So that's what she's currently doing. But so, yeah, so we moved back in 2012 and it's been great ever since.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I should just keep long-winding this story.
Yeah.
But this kind of ties us together.
Sure.
I had been in town 3 weeks, didn't know anybody. I was playing with one artist, my buddy David Kroll. He was originally from Iowa.
Okay.
I was playing with him, and so that's a gig, about the only gig that I had.
Right.
And I was in town for 3 weeks, and I was working on building my studio, and I get a call from a number I've never, and I was like, hello, and this guy on the other line said, hey, my name's Josh. I'm a drummer. I got your name somehow. I don't even know how he got it.
Yeah.
And he said, I need a sub for this weekend. And I'm just like, oh, okay. And I'm just like sitting there thinking, well, I think that's what you do. You just say I don't know what.
Show up and do it.
This was a Wednesday. And, you know, he's like, I need a sub this weekend. Right. And I'm like, okay, cool. Yeah, I guess I can do it, you know? And he goes, well, cool. It's about 35 tunes. And I'm like,
oh, God. Yeah, that's a nightmare.
Yep, cool. And I was like, who's it for? And he goes, Amanda Daughtry.
Oh, okay.
So this is where our stories start coming together.
Right.
So anyway, long story short is on that gig, which I barely got through, but
I've had those before.
On that gig, I met Anthony Olympia, who now is with Everett. And through him, I started meeting all these artists that I met Jameson because of that.
Right.
I met Everett and Brent Rupert because of that.
Yeah.
I met Adam the next gig on Amanda.
Yeah.
And I met another guy named Will Adkins, one of my favorite keyboardists.
Yeah. Actually, I just did a gig with Will not with him, but we played, did a gig with Chuck Wicks and Mark Wills down in Florida 2 weeks ago, and Will was on that. So love Will. Yeah, great dude.
Literally, I can look back and everything I'm doing right now stems from me answering that call.
Isn't it funny how, you know, I try to tell people, that, you know, that maybe you're new to Nashville or don't know anything like that. Just, keep you never know who you're talking to or who you're working with. So be nice all the time.
Yeah.
And if you think you can do something, just say yes to everything and go in and do the best job you can. And
I think that's really important when you first get to town is say yes to everything. And there comes a point in your life where you can't do that anymore.
Sure.
But I think as long as you can, you should, because that would have, I should have said no because I wasn't prepared. I was in the middle of working on building my studio and like all this other stuff. And I was scared to death because I hadn't even been in town very long and we weren't settled yet. Right. And I just thought I'm going to do it. And so what's funny is last year I was with Jameson at a festival in Chicago and, somebody announced, it was Charlie Worsham. He was like, hey, everybody give it up for my drummer, Josh Hunt. And I was like, that's the guy that called me.
That's the guy that you sub for.
So I went up and I introduced myself there. I was like, man, you probably don't know me or remember me, but you called me once and it changed my life. And he's like, whoa, dude, that's awesome. Yeah. I just got your number from somebody. And I was like, well, man, it really changed my life. So it was cool to see him and have that conversation.
I'm just thinking of something now. You know you need to watch. Are you a Bill Murray fan? There's a documentary now on Netflix, and I forget what it's called. I think it's called The Bill Murray Stories.
Somebody just told me about this.
You need to watch. I watched it on the plane coming back the other day, and it's kind of loosely based on that sort of idea where Bill Murray kind of does all these crazy things where you hear all these stories about him through the years, showing up at someone's house.
Yeah.
There's a house party and he just shows up and does the dishes and then leaves. weird shit like that.
I love Bill Murray, man.
But they were talking about, and I'm probably going to get this all wrong, and this may or may not tie in, but they were talking about, in this documentary, about Bill Murray's sort of zen-like, the way he goes through life, mm-hmm. and just trying to change the temperature of the room with people. And we try to, I think we try to steer our lives, and we think it's like human beings are, we are under so much of the illusion that we control anything.
Yeah.
And I don't believe we do. I don't believe we control anything at all. Like, right. I think there's a lot of it that's like 99% of it is like way out of our hands. So they tell this story in this documentary, and this won't ruin it for anybody's watching, but it's a loose story about this guy who, I guess he has this terrible luck, and he loses, he's like a horse farmer, and he loses all his horses. And so the next door neighbor comes over and goes, I'm really sorry to hear about the fact that you lost all your horses. Okay. And the guy says, well, okay, well, who knows what's better good. And then the next day, his son goes out and like gets all these horses back for him. And the next door neighbor comes over and goes, oh, really? Congratulations. I'm really, you know, glad to see that you got all your horses back. And he goes, ah, who knows what's bad or good. And so then the next day, the son falls off one of the horses and breaks his leg. And he's like, I'm sorry to hear about your son. He's like, well, who knows what's bad or good, you know? And so life is a series of these things where you just kind of have to roll with it, and you kind of have to, you don't know what's, you know, when something might be great, something might lead to something horrible.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
Does that make any sense? Have I made any sense? I've had a lot of coffee.
There was something about some horses and a kid broke his leg.
Got that. Am I making sense?
No,
but no,
it does.
It's one of those things where you just never really know what's, you know, when something looks like it might be a small thing.
Yeah.
It could turn out to be a series of kind of escalating, you know,
You said it. It's like we're not in control of anything. Right. Like, so the people I think who try to hold on so tight to that are the ones who are constantly frustrated in life
right.
and constantly feeling like they're not getting what they want out of it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like when you can just kind of like roll with the punches and kind of just not take for granted what's happening now.
Sure.
Yeah. I think it's just way easier to enjoy
the moment for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to do better with that too, because we're all guilty of that. We have dreams and we have goals.
Everybody does.
It's like, I want to be this. I want to be that. I want to do this. I want to do that. I think that's good. You have to have drive.
Right.
We wouldn't do this if we weren't driven, but.
No. If it was for the money, I would have quit like first day.
Oh, you're not rich?
Oh, no.
Oh.
No. Some people might think I'm rich in spirit. I got a lot of heart, kid.
Why am I
calling myself
that.
Kid? I got a lot of heart, kid.
You got a lot of heart, kid. I agree, though, man. It's like, it's just, you don't know what's going to happen. So,
yeah.
Especially in an industry like this.
Yeah.
There's no formula. There's no go to school, get this degree, apply at this place, and you will now be a professional musician.
Do you think that having your studio, because you're a studio owner and you've actually been fairly successful producer and all that kind of stuff too. Do you find that that helps you offset maybe some of those feelings of like, you know, like, Jameson's thing could go and be huge and that's all you could do, or maybe not.
Yes.
Like, does it help offset some of that maybe anxiety that we all kind of feel about those things? Like,
it does. It does. I mean, I think whether it's, no matter what it is, like having your whole identity and all your eggs in one basket, you know, can give you that anxiety feeling of like, well, if this doesn't work, what am I going to do?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't, some producing and mixing and engineering is something I've always loved. Like I said, I've been doing it forever.
Yeah.
So it doesn't feel like a backup or a plan B. In fact, for me, it's my plan A. Like that's what I always want to do. I was actually, it's funny, like Jameson called me over a year ago. Mm-hmm. It was before we did those shows.
Yep.
And I was seriously considering, kind of coming off the road.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm 39. I'm gonna be 40 soon. I've got 3 kids now.
Clearly it's over.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Just put a fork in me next year.
Dude, I'm 47.
Oh, I know. No, but what I'm saying is for me in my stage of life,
sure.
Like, you know, I'm trying to be there more for my kids and just be around more.
Yep.
Plus, like I said, I love producing and working in the studio. So I'm like, I think it's time for me to sort of make this priority. I also teach here where we're sitting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. And I love this job. And that came about a year ago as well. I've been teaching here as an adjunct for a few years.
Okay.
But they called me a year ago and said, Well, let me back up. I'm getting ahead of myself.
That's fine.
So Jameson calls me.
Right.
And I'm already having these feelings. I talk to my wife. I'm like, I just don't think I'm going to do the road thing anymore. Mm-hmm. I still love to play, but, it's just on those, when I have to weigh everything on the scales of priority,
right.
It was sinking lower for me in terms of like, I got a lot of other responsibilities and just things that I want to do also. And so I'm like, I just don't know if I'm a tour anymore. And then Jameson calls me one day, and he's like, what are you doing in 2019? And I literally was like, well, I'm probably retiring. Why? You
know? Yeah, right.
And
right.
He just kind of laughed and he said, I just got offered the Luke Combs tour.
Yeah.
And so I thought about it, I said, well, let me think about it, and talk to Sherry. And it's just one of those things that just makes sense. I mean, Jameson is a great artist and I really believe in him, but he's also like a good friend.
He's a good dude, man. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and then the other guys in the band, Adam is one of my best friends. Yeah. Jimmy's a great dude. We're best buds.
Yeah.
And so it's like, to say no to that, I couldn't find many reasons to say no to that.
I mean, who gets to do that, dude?
Yeah.
Like, you're doing something that I was talking to Adam on our talk about it, that like, it's the dream. Like everybody that moves to Nashville wants to get on a tour where you go and do arenas with an artist who is doing big things.
It really is. And so there was no good reason for me to say no. And then, literally though, a month later, the school here calls and says like, hey, I know you've been working here as an adjunct, but like, we really are happy with what you're bringing. We really want to bring you in as a full-time instructor here.
How's that worked with have they been understanding about the tour
really
schedule?
Cool. Yeah, like I feel bad. I feel guilty most of the time. Like you're paying me, right? Like you're paying me to not be here. No, it's been cool, but it brings a lot of extra, like when I'm home, it's typically filled with studio and this. Mm-hmm. So I don't just get home and kind of recharge for Thursday. Literally, I get home Sunday. Monday morning, I'm in here teaching.
Yeah.
Tuesday, I'm teaching. Wednesday, I'm teaching. And then I'm booking studio sessions in the evenings on those three. Yeah. And so, that's why I said earlier, I try to keep my family at the top of that. And I'm failing.
Yeah.
But, so it's a lot. But, man, it's all awesome stuff. So I feel really bad ever complaining about how busy.
Yeah, sure.
Like, people are like, oh, man, you bet you're so busy. And it's true. I'm like dying most of the time, but I don't like whining about it. Cause it's like, it sounds stupid. It's like, oh, I got so much work. I can't keep up.
Should I take the Rolls or the Bentley to the grocery store today?
So I don't ever want to complain about it, even though it is hard. Like it's just a different hard.
Of course it is. Yeah.
It's go back to my balance thing. Uh-huh. Like too much of anything, even if it's all good, can sometimes be bad.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah.
So like, everybody wants good work and solid work. And I have more than of that I can handle right now. So it still brings some stress with
it. Yeah, I bet.
But I'm super grateful for all of it. And that's why I don't want to let any of it go right now. I'm trying to hold on to everything with dear life just because I enjoy all of the things I'm doing so much.
Right. Right. Well, yeah, it's, and I have friends who are on, one of my buddies is on a huge artist right now. It's like, and he still has his moments where it's all relative. It's all relative to what's going on. And, I'll reference another podcast thing I heard about recently where they were talking about, the money thing and, money's a big stressor for a lot of people, but at a certain point when you have X amount of dollars, it doesn't change your life at all. Like you get to a certain point and nothing after that point changes. Like you may not have to worry about money anymore, but it doesn't take away the problems. It doesn't take away the daily stresses. It doesn't take away all the, the stuff that you deal with on a daily basis.
And you probably just have different problems. You're not stressed about paying the credit card bill anymore, but you've got a bazillion other responsibilities because of that money.
Right.
Jameson always says, he's got this saying, he's like, money's not real.
It really isn't.
Yeah.
And, I'm guilty of that too. I stress about money all the time, but I've always had enough. You know what I mean? Like I've never been like begging for food, or I've never been in the streets like, worried about where my next meal is going to come from, or having a roof over my head. Where my tacos are. Listen, I can always afford tacos no matter what. Even if it's, Taco Bell, Taco Bell's got the dollar menu at Taco Bell, right? Don't they have a dollar menu? Or is
they
McDonald's?
Do. I mean,
I haven't eaten fast food in like a year.
Barely
so
tacos, but
not real tacos.
They're shaped as a taco.
Can I trouble you for some taco shaped foods, please? That's the way I want you to order tacos from now on. Do you have any taco shaped things?
Oh man, this is derailing.
It's okay. No, see, that's the best part about it, is that it could go right off the rails and we're all good.
That's awesome.
So how many more dates do you guys, you guys are busy till May, right?
We are. We're busy till May. We end at Red Rocks. And then there's rumors of this continuing. So
I think Adam said something about the fall, into the fall.
Yeah. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to say that or not, but.
Well, it's already out on Adam's talk, so it's too late.
Yeah, I know. I was like, no, I think we're going to be busy through December.
Yeah.
So it's crazy.
Well, dude, that's amazing.
That's to me, it's unheard of, like, to have that much work, you know?
Yeah.
Because I've been out on a few things where you go and you're opening support for somebody, but you know, that's typically a couple months, 3 months, a leg, you know, but and we got this whole year.
That's great. That's great. I told Adam too, like I'm not, you probably listened to it, but I'm not, like, I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
Like, I'm thrilled for you guys. I think it's incredible. And there are people that I've dealt with that, like, when somebody that they know does well, they kind of go, you know, like, oh, that guy's doing this. But I love it, man. One of my friends do well, and it's you guys are a great bunch of people too.
Yeah.
I won't go into it again, but but it's awesome.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah, no, for me, that's the only thing that makes it worth it is, like, yeah, there's money to be made, and there's, you know, walking out in front of an arena like that every night and feeling that energy is really special. Yep. So you can't replace that.
Yep.
But that's 30 minutes of my day.
Oh, sure.
Out of 24 hours, that's 30, that feeling like that for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So the rest of it, as you talk about all the time on here, it's the people.
You have to be able to hang. You have to get along with people because, you know, and it's, something that I'm learning how to do too is have business relationships with people that I'm touring with, because my dream as a kid was always to be in a band with friends of mine.
Yeah.
But you can't be friends with everybody. And
that's a good point.
It's one of those things where sometimes you might be lucky to be with guys who you're best friends with.
Yep.
And sometimes this is my current situation. I'm not talking shit about anybody.
Right.
I'm not really too close with any of the people that I play with. I love them all. They're great. Mm-hmm. I enjoy their company. They're hilarious people. They're funny people. They're sweet people. But I'm still the new guy.
Mm.
And I'm still, even though I've been in the situation a year now, I haven't really done too much in the line of like we haven't really hung out outside of it too much, because our bass player lives in Cincinnati and Casey, the drummer, lives here in town, but he's busy with a million other things.
Uh-huh.
Aaron and his wife, Aaron's busy doing a bunch of things. Mm-hmm. So, and our keyboard player lives in Canada. So I love them all and I love spending time with them, but we're not necessarily best friends.
Right.
And so it's a weird dynamic for me. And it's something I'm still kind of trying to come to terms with. And I, you know, I don't drink. Aaron doesn't drink. The other guys drink.
Yeah.
And I'll hang with them to a certain point when they're drinking. But then there's a certain point where it's like, listen, I'm tapping out because, like, this is, you guys are doing your thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm being the fuddy-duddy. Like, I want to go to bed. Like,
whenever you're the one not drinking, it's way less fun for you than everybody else, sure.
Yes and no. I mean, I think I'm almost 3 years into being sober now.
Which, congratulations. Thank you, dude. That's awesome.
It's been great, and it's also been very weird at times.
Yeah.
But there is that where, you know, it's again, my dream was always to be with friends of mine. And so I've had to kind of separate the work aspect of, like, this is a job, even though it may not look on the outside like it's a job to people, because they're like, oh, God, you go out and you travel and you do all these great and wonderful things. This is kind of maybe bringing it, bookending what you were saying at the beginning about, like, you know, like, oh, I'm complaining about 3 catered meals a day and all that kind of stuff. But it is, there are aspects of it that it is a job. It is, you know, when you're at that level that you're at and the level that I'm at, it's, you're expected to perform, and you're expected to perform at the highest level possible, and you're getting paid a good amount of money to do that. So it is a job.
Yeah. Well, and even so, I mean, like I said, I'm good friends with all the guys in the band. I consider, you know, like, I've known Adam forever and he's a really close buddy. But even then, when you go out and we do that so much together, we don't hang out in town. You know what I mean? Cause like,
no, you're always, like, together. Yeah.
Yeah. Always together. And it's just like, you kind of need that space a little bit to kind of not kill each other after a while.
And no, right.
So, yeah, that's interesting. I haven't really thought about that. That was a good point that you said, though, about learning how to have business relationships.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you don't have to, like, always, I mean, because, I don't know, I guess maybe when you start bands, when you're musician types like us, when you start bands, I don't know if everybody feels the same way about it, but for me, it was always like, this is my gang. This is, like, these are the guys that I'm going into battle with, and, like, we got to be tight, and we got to, you know. But as you get older, it's, and especially the way the Nashville machine works, you get thrown together with people where it's a business relationship, and you go out and you may play one or two gigs with people and then never see them again.
Yeah.
Or rarely maybe see them around town, like at a show here and there, and go, hey, I remember I played with that guy once. Hey dude, what's up? But you're not always, you know, it's not always, you're not always a gang. You're hired guns thrown together for the purpose of performing those songs for that artist. And then you're done, your job is done, you get paid and you go home. And
yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah. I wish I was better, because I take everything like super personally.
I do too, dude. I'm the same way.
So it's like, yeah. I want everybody to be my best friend.
Dude, I'm the same. Maybe that's why we get along so well. Yeah, but I'm the same way, because like I've talked with a friend of mine about, you know, my current situation, about like, oh, I've kind of felt like the fifth wheel on this thing and that thing. And he's like, who the fuck cares? Like, he's like, you're not there to make friends, you know? Like, I mean, if you make friends, great, but you're not there for that reason. So, you know, if you're getting along with everyone, that's just fine, but you don't have to go home and like, then be best friends with those people.
Right.
I'm still learning. I'm still trying to figure that out.
Yeah. I'm sure every situation has its own dynamic.
Yeah, exactly. So you got the rest of the tour coming up. I think we're almost at an hour. That went by really quickly.
It did.
You probably know I do the stories from the road thing at the end. Yes. So I need to ask you this. Do you have any road stories? Do you have anything that's like happened to you that like that sticks out in your mind as like the maybe the craziest thing that you've ever experienced, or the weirdest thing, or the scariest thing?
I should have been thinking about this. I get asked this a lot. And then I'm always like, yeah, I don't know. And I can never come up with anything. And then an hour later, I'm like, oh, why didn't I tell him about that time?
Or the coolest moment. I don't know. Something that's, I mean, you've had a lot of cool things lately.
I have. Yeah, I'm trying to think of something recent, because I probably have a better chance of remembering it.
You're coming up on 40 now. I know it's a little tough. Like, it's a little tougher to recall things.
Oh, man. You can edit this part out, right?
I can.
Where I'm like scratching my head and going...
It can all come or go.
This is going to be...
You know how recording technology works.
Yeah. It's going to be a 12-minute podcast by the time I get done.
I talked with my buddy Luke today. How's it going? And that's another episode. That does it for this one.
Oh, shoot.
Luke is a drummer. Thank you very much
tacos.
For listening.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Tacos.
Gosh dang, I'm blanking right now. I always do this. This question has some sort of like psychic, like mind.
Anything weird that like anything really strange that's ever happened, or like somebody weird that you've encountered? We had some weird. We had some weird people. There were some weird people at some of those shows. Is it? You're not bombing at all.
I'm just trying to think of a good story. Like, frick.
I might just leave this all in.
Just keep going. How long you guys got who are listening?
Just hang in there. Tons of time. Just hang in there. We're getting there.
A good one
we're getting
coming.
There. So sorry. I feel like I've asked a horrible question. I feel like a terrible host right now.
That's a great question. Why do I not have a good answer?
You know, a lot of people don't. Like, it's weird, because I'll ask that question at the end of the show, and a lot of people will go, you know, even Billy Sheehan. I just talked to Billy Sheehan.
Yeah.
Like, went to his house, which was weird and cool. And he came to it pretty quickly, but he's also got, you know, like 40 years of touring.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Just freeze up.
I don't know.
It's one of those things, man, where like, I don't know, you just get so...
Well, the other thing is like, I mean, I've had plenty of weird things happen, but like in terms of this current situation, mm-hmm. one of the things that I really enjoy about, like, I whined about the negative side of... you know, being on this tour, but one of the things that is really good about this is how consistent everything is.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a lot of variation from night to night between what happens.
Right.
Like, I don't have any weird crowd stories, because
you don't really deal with them.
You don't at this level. It's not like when you play the clubs or the bars,
right?
And after the show, there's like the drunk people trying to like talk to you about whatever.
Does Jameson do any kind of meet and greet afterwards?
He does do a meet and greet, and I usually go with him,
mm-hmm.
And I'm usually like taking...
To run interference or take photos for people?
Yeah, half the time I end up taking photos
right. So
he can, you know, talk to them or whatever.
But that's not a general meeting, because it's too large of a crowd to go out and just be in the arena.
Like, no, he goes out.
Oh, he goes out and does
He goes
it.
Out to the merch.
Oh, okay.
It's been cool.
What's response been like
great.
For that? It's been great. Cool.
We got this... He's got like one of those pop-up banners that says Meet Jameson here after the show.
Sure, right on.
And it's good, man. I mean, we're standing there for an hour afterwards.
See, that's one of the things I really dig about the country situation as opposed to like other things is like, you know, you're not going to go see, I don't know, name X rock band or Y rock band. And they're not going to be out there afterwards talking to people.
Right.
But the country, for country music, it seems a little bit more like they want to be more accessible and they want to be more down to earth and they want to be like every artist does it. Like it's crazy to me.
Yeah. Especially I think for those people who are. Because I think the reason why Jameson is so successful is because he really is a real person.
Yeah, right.
Like what you see of him is not in any way fabricated or...
There's not an ounce of pretentiousness in that guy's body.
Yeah.
Which I really like.
And so I think the real factor for him is why he has so many fans now. Uh-huh. And I think that's why Luke Combs... has so many fans because he's just a real dude.
Yeah. Is he?
Okay. People identify with that, you know, and he wants to be that. He goes out of his way to make sure that he doesn't get away from that. And I think people can sense that.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that's, I think that's one reason why Jameson's doing so well. But anyway, so I do the meet and greets. So yeah, but that's the only time where I even really interact with the fans. So there's not a lot of crazy fan stories.
Right.
The routine is the same every day.
Yep.
The production is the same every day. There's just not a lot of like...
Yeah. That must be nice though to some degree because like when you're on the road at lower levels or whatever like that, every day is a little bit different and you never know what kind of production you're going to deal with in one place versus another place. Like I would love that. For me, if it's the same thing, then I can perform. Like I'm good on my feet, but I'm much better when I'm prepared and rehearsed and I know what's happening and I know what's coming. I don't like a lot of curveballs.
Yeah,
you know, like,
that's the thing. There's hardly any curveballs on this tour, that's one of the things. I'm a very routine kind of guy. I like having the same thing all the time. And so for me, that's one of those big positives of this tour is like just how routine it is. I got a story.
Oh, you do? Oh, good. Okay.
Just talking about Jameson.
Yeah.
This isn't that crazy, but like,
that's right.
It's sort of a running joke with us in the band, but it's a couple of years ago we were playing, I was playing with Jameson and he had one of those insane, like we're playing a festival at like 11 a.m. It was up in Michigan or something. So we had to leave at like 2:30 in the morning.
Right.
And so we left, drove all day. We had to play two shows.
Okay.
It was like 98 degrees outside. We're in a tent playing. So just miserable. And I think we did like two straight days of that or something. And the second day we're outside, super hot. And I'm just like, I remember like I was freezing cold. Like I was shaking, I was shivering. And I told Jameson, I was like, dude, I don't know, man. Like, I don't feel good. I'm not sure if I can do this or whatever. And he just looks at me and kind of shakes his head like he does. He's like, dude, you're just tired. It's been a long week. You're just tired. That's what he says to me. I'm like, okay, you know? And so I go up there and I play and I'm like, man, I'm not okay. Something's not right. So I play the whole show, get through it. We even went out and had a drink that night and I'm still feeling terrible, but you know, everybody's like, you know, it's probably Adam or somebody, brother, here, have a drink.
You'll be better. You'll feel better.
So I'm drinking and we go home and I'm just like, oh, I'm not okay. You know? So we had to go out 2 days later and I was like, I have to go figure something out. So I went to the doctor and the doctor said, ran some tests and he calls me. He's like, go get in bed. And don't come out for like 4 days. Like you have full on pneumonia and like you are in bad shape. And so I called Jameson. I called Jameson the next day and I was like, hey, we're supposed to leave in 2 days. Yeah. I was like, hey, I'm not going to make it. And I was like, remember when you told me that I was just tired? I was like, I have pneumonia. So our running joke now, every time anybody's like, I'm not feeling good, Jameson's always like, you're just tired. Because last time he said that, I was literally like, doctor's like, you have to go to bed, quarantine yourself in a room for 56 hours or whatever.
So you'll be fine.
Yeah, that's Jameson's like, Come on, you're just tired.
The bone sticking out of the leg. You'll be fine. You're just tired.
Put some tape on it.
Put some tape on it. Duct tape fixes everything.
Anyway, I don't know if that's a great
story from the road,
but that's one that comes up a lot because it's always like, you're just tired.
No, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Yeah. Dude, thank you so much for taking the time out to do this. I'm happy to have
I'm so pumped.
First podcast.
I feel like a new man.
See, any other dreams you want me to help you achieve this year, I cannot help you.
I'll send you my list. You may have some more on that.
I might be able to make that happen.
Yeah.
But dude, congrats on the tour. Congrats to all you guys. Please tell J-Mo and the guys I send my best.
I certainly will.
And dude, I'm excited every day. I open up social media to see every weekend. I get it every weekend. I get more like, oh, check out look how cool Adam looks on stage.
Yeah. Like, that's a tough balance about that too. Not to keep rolling on this, but
keep
like,
going.
I, for my own sake, I like to document each show.
Yeah.
And so I'll post one with the show number on it, you know, but I never want it to come across as like, look at me.
No, it doesn't. You know, dude, trust me.
But I have a lot of people who really do are like, keep posting pictures because I like seeing what you're doing.
I love it. Like, people give me shit. Like the current band gives me shit for being on Instagram. I have no idea why. I don't think I post a lot.
No,
but,
it's great.
But I'm like, there's people that want to see this shit. Like, I don't care if you don't think you're important enough. Like I'm important, damn it. Like, totally. You know, like this matters to people. I have like, you know, friends and relatives and whatever that want, like that don't live the life we live, that want
to
see.
When I don't talk to you super often, I see what you're up to
see,
too.
You exactly. Know? So, it's nice. So there's nothing wrong. As long as you're not going, check me out.
Yeah.
Hey, check out what I get to do and you don't.
Yeah. Well, I'll keep posting so you can see what I'm doing.
I would love
it. You post and I'll see what you're doing and we don't ever have to talk ever again.
Screw everybody else. Those people. No, well, it's great, dude. Thanks a lot.
You.
Thanks, buddy. Love you. Thanks,
love you.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, does it for another fine episode of Turn It On. I hope you enjoyed my talk with my friend Luke. He and the other members of the Jameson Rogers camp are all some of the finest human beings I know, and also some of the most talented and deserving of all the success that's been coming their way as of late. So go catch the Beer Never Broke My Heart tour with Jameson Rogers, Lanco, and Luke Combs when it comes to your area, which it soon will. Those guys are playing just about everywhere over the next year. Give Luke a follow on the socials. He's at Luke DeJanes on Instagram and Twitter. That's at LUKE. DeJaynes. While you're at it, give me a follow as well. I'm at Michael J Music on Facebook and Twitter, and I'm at Michael J Official on Instagram. We also have a PayPal donation button on our website, tiopod.com. Go ahead and drop us a few bucks, if you will, so we can buy ourselves some fish tacos. You don't have to donate, but I'd love you forever if you do. And that's it. I think it's only fitting to leave you today with one of my very favorite Jameson Rogers tunes before we get out of here. And another great chat is coming your way next week with the lovely and talented Katie Rocks and Brandy Sidorek of the all-female Canadian country band Nice Horse. Thanks again for listening, everybody. This is Midnight Daydream by my friend Jameson Rogers, and I will see you next time here on Turn It On.
Found somebody new. She ain't from Mississippi, but she looks a lot like you. And something crazy happened when I took her home last night. She invited me inside. She turned down all the lights. I found myself inside a midnight daydream. Maybe if you saw it, then I know it may seem like I'm moving on. But every time I touch her, every time I taste her kiss, I just feel your lips. I can't snap out of this midnight daydream.
Like I'm still with you.
Midnight daydream.
Damn it, girl, I miss you.
She led me up the stairs into her bedroom down the hall. Put her hands under my shirt and pinned me up against the wall. She kissed me on my neck, you whispered like you used to do. She was slipping off her dress and I was slipping in too. A midnight daydream. Maybe if you saw it, then I know it may seem like I'm moving on. But every time I touch her, every time I taste her kiss, I just feel your lips. I can't snap out of this midnight daydream.
Like I'm still with you.
Midnight daydream.
Damn it, girl, I
like you never broke my heart, like nothing ever changed. Damn, I almost caught her by your name, girl. Saw it, then I know it may seem like I'm moving on, but every time I touch her, every time I taste her kiss, I just feel your lips. I can't snap out of this.